fine. Thank you.
Oh, you guys are so nice. These are my friends from co-op, like, that we, like, helped build over the last 10 years, but I haven't been a part of it, and now they're here to support me and give me compliments and make me feel encouraged in doing this presentation. Elizabeth called me, it's been a while ago, 6 months, and I feel like for my life, I'm not a super detailed, like, planner. Like, maybe I'll be, like, foggily, and 20 years is where I want to be, maybe 10 here. But somebody calls me 6 months, I'm like, well, you do this on this day. I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen. We don't have cows anymore, but that used to be my excuse. Like, I don't know, maybe the cows will get out that day and I won't be able to make it, which makes me sound flaky, and I'm really not that flaky. But I feel like because we've been involved in agriculture, maybe I felt like I couldn't always plan too far ahead because I really didn't know how everything was going to turn out. My topic is how to lead book discussions. And so I named this Shared Books, Shared Souls. And this is my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter. And then I have the other kind of kids in between those two. So I was in this last class with Tatiana, and she said I had two girls first, and I'm like, I'm a brilliant homeschooler. Like, we're so nice, we're so good, they're so smart, they're so well behaved, and then I had a boy. Well, I totally understand that, because having a girl first is like, she was so helpful, and she loved doing school, and then I had these six boys, and my two youngest boys are now like a senior and a sophomore. But I tell people I feel like I've survived a frat party in my house for the last 10 years. And then I have this girl who, again, have somebody that I can relate to because she likes to play the piano and read and do her school. So it's like Heavenly Father's little gift after those six boys. And those six boys have so many wonderful gifts too. But they are warrior spirits. And even though I wanted them to sit down for hours and hours and read the classics, I could put it in little snippets at a time throughout our life, and I'll share some of their what they've shared with me, just so you can kind of get what they did get out of their homeschooling experience. In fact, will you go in my purse and get my phone, because I forgot to get that out. So my first foray really into homeschooling, once my kids were old enough to really think, okay, what do we need to make this look like, was through leadership education from the DeMilles. And I love so many things about that philosophy, and I feel like it gives you so much permission to change it and adapt it to whatever your family needs. But I really bought in wholeheartedly to my kids need to read. We need to have reading be our family culture. We need to be able to have so much shared vocabulary, shared experiences, shared ideas from great books that we read together. And thankfully, my husband was totally on board with that too. And he spent a lot of time reading. He spent a lot of time sharing the things that he read with our children. And as you can tell, with a lot of boys, that actually made a lot of difference. I think being the mom, maybe your girls will listen to you maybe a little bit easier than the boys sometimes. But there's something so special and powerful about a dad saying, this is important. It's not just one more thing that your mom's like, come on, we're going to read our books. It's like, dad's like, this is what's going to create you into the person that you need to become. So I just wanted to share. I asked my kids, I said, can you each take a few minutes today and think of a book that we read together or that was part of our family canon that made an impact on you, and anything specific? Also, movies, any lessons from those that you feel became a specific part of our family's core beliefs? So, my oldest, she put this, and I would have never guessed this. I would have never been like, oh yeah, that's the book that she loved. She said Trumpet of the Swan, and then she listed out the principles: love, service, stillness, and honesty. It's one of my favorite books that you read to us. Last year, I read it to the girls. She has four kids of her own now, and it was so good to go back and read it. Even though it's a simple child story, it taught so many lessons in serving others, being honest, learning to be still, like the kids watching the gosling hatch, and love and care for God's creations. And then her next book, which is definitely one of our books, and this probably would have been one that I would have guessed, Little Bridges. I loved that Dad read this book to us. It was definitely part of our family canon, but it also became more because he read it and helped define the canon and then tried to best live it and teach it to us. About being honest, hardworking, and that life is full of hard things, and to be thankful for those times, to learn to rely on each other, support one another, serve, and be involved in the community. So that was like one of those just amazing like mom payout times. Now here's from my boys, who did take time, but it's not like long and thought out. But my oldest says, Last of the Mohicans, Master and Commander, and The Art of War. Those are all three books that my husband talked to them about and that we took some time in our family to read. Next son says The Walking Drum. That's a Louis L'Amour book. Lord of the Rings, movies and books. I don't know how many Lord of the Rings, like full extended version marathons that we had. And my husband's a little bit of a spoilsport because sometimes in the movie I'd want to pause it and be like, no, what do you think about this? And he told me, like, shut up, we're watching a movie. But there were times outside of watching the movies when I could hear them talking about those characters, playing out those characters, being the heroes of that movie, having to decide and make the hard decisions. One of the things we did talk about in our family that kind of came from that movie is like the Sam principle. And we talked about Frodo and Sam, and then we also talked about Nephi and Sam. And we talked about, I think too many times people, maybe like from Great Expectations, they aspire to Nephi or they aspire to Frodo, and yet it's the Sam, right? That person who's just developed the discipline and the courage and the willingness to not necessarily have the glory, but just do the work that it takes to get stuff done. And so that kind of became like a family principle that we discussed. Hank the cow dog. We did grow up. We had cows and we have horses and stuff. So that's something. And, you know, it's humor too, right? Because so many weird things happen in life sometimes, so many hard things, and you got to have a good sense of humor. My youngest son says Little Bridges, like his sister. Again, The Walking Drum, Lonesome Gods. This is from my daughter, The Lonesome Gods. These are the principles. Read, 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 and shut up and listen to those around you. You will learn more this way than any other way. All right. Those are just some things from our family. So I just want to share some of my ideas and how we help create these things. Actually, my next question says, do you guys have a favorite book in your family or something that you've discussed, a book you've discussed in a group that you just thought was life-changing?
We really loved Number of the Stars.
Okay, you know what? My simulation here is on Number of the Stars, so. Okay, any other ones that you thought was life-changing?
I love Understood Betsy.
Okay, Understood Betsy. All right, anybody else read that? It helps you to kind of understand an idea of education. All right. Yes.
Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, yes. Anne of Green Gables. I will say that it's been 3 years ago now. One of my sons, during wrestling, ended up with a double concussion, a hit to the front and a hit to the back of the head simultaneously. He had amnesia for 2 weeks, and we went through like 2 years of constant therapy for him. And we live in a tiny little town called Aberdeen, and we basically know most of the teachers there personally and stuff, and so a lot of my kids went to school so I could focus on trying to get him back alive again. And so my youngest daughter's been kind of in and out of public school, and she's done just great. But the thing that she said, Mom, I've got to come home. I'm sick of public school, which... Here's just a little note. If any of you are just starting in homeschooling, do everything you can to not demonize public school to justify homeschooling. Because sometimes it will be the greatest blessing to your life. But she said, I read Heidi, and they would only give me one AR point, so I had to read stupid books so I could get the AR points. So I don't know if you guys know what AR is, but it's like the reading program that the public school uses, and every book has a point system, and you just go and like basically answer the questions. Was his sock blue or red in chapter 5, right? It's just, that's just kind of like what it is. But she was so upset that she read Heidi, and she could only get one AR point, so she had to read the other books from the school list. So when we're going to prepare for a discussion, of course, the most important thing to start out with, I think, is to understand your group. Are you doing this with a bunch of young kids? Are you doing this with adults? What are the things that matter to them? What are the things that motivate them? Right? You can read a book and have different people pull out different things that matter to them, and they will discuss those things. No matter how much you want, if your kids are not interested in something, it's so hard to get them to buy in. But if you can find a little connection to something, they will listen. For one of my examples on this, in my class that we're doing on Mondays, I've been reading A Peace Like a River. How many of you guys have read this book by Leif Inger? It's a modern book. It's just beautifully written. And one of the things in here is these two kids that have been causing havoc in school and just not, they haven't had a good life and they're just basically bullies and brats. Their dad, who was a coach, called out these kids, and now these kids are coming to their house and they're going to hurt them. And we get to the end of a chapter and I have one girl and six boys that are in this class. And so when we get to the end and the book is built up to these guys are going to come and hurt this family. They have told them that. They've written them letters. What are you now allowed to do? Because the boys in the family now are preparing to be able to do whatever needs to be done to protect their family. Right? That's a part of the book that those boys will invest in conversation in. Because that's, for most boys, that's in their heart. That protector, right? They want to know, where are the lines? Where are the boundaries? What can I justify? How should I prepare? Okay, I was able to get five teenage boys to have a conversation for 30 minutes about this book, about the characters in this book, about the situation in this book, because it was something that they could buy into, something that they cared about and were willing to talk about. I have spent some of my probably most valuable educational time in groups of homeschool parents who were like, we decided to homeschool, now what? And then you start to think, what really matters now? And you find some of the great, not necessarily curriculum, but the great books that are written on philosophies of education. And then you think, I don't know any of this stuff, right? Like, I don't understand what a liberal arts education looks like. I don't understand necessarily the freedom principles like I should understand. I don't necessarily understand gospel principles like I should. And so I was blessed with people that we formed discussion groups and we read through like The Making of America together and The 5,000 Year Leap together. And we read just different great classics together and discussed the principles. And we helped develop our family cultures, our family philosophies, and then our homeschool commonwealths and our homeschool co-ops on those philosophies that then our kids were able to reap the benefits from. Okay, so we got to know our audience. We got to know what they're going to relate to so that it helps us as we're reading the book to pick out things that they're going to be like, oh, I want to invest here in this conversation. So then read the book. One of the things that I found really valuable over the last couple of years is a podcast called Close Reads. And it's a part of, I don't know if they're Catholic, but it's some more like Orthodox, Christian-based group, that do some great homeschooling things. But, there's three or four people and they will pick a book that'll last maybe 6 weeks and they'll like chapters 1 through 4 and they'll read through that book, and then they'll come together and they'll do like an hour long podcast. And they go through and pull out the tiniest of little details and they talk about, the five questions that we relate to this book, and we'll get to what those five questions are. And then kind of to the end, they somehow magically turn it from like just like the what, the why, the how, to what this means. And it's like you listen to like that last 5-10 minutes and you just feel so inspired. You feel like your soul has changed, like you've been uplifted, and now you understand somewhat about what it means to be human and what the meaning of the world around you is and what your place is in it. You just understand it a little bit better and just a little bit more inspired. So if you want to become a better reader yourself and to learn how to really get those great things out of books, that podcast is fantastic for that. Read your book. Read it slowly enough that you can underline things, that you can write notes in the margins. Go ahead, look up the words that you don't know, especially as you're reading some of those older classics. One of the little references you can use is 1828dictionary.com to look up the meaning from the words when they were written back then, right? Because sometimes we read a word and we think we know what the meaning is, but we know the modern meaning. And a lot of times you look up what that 1828 meaning is, and it has so much more complexity to it, and it gives you a lot more understanding of what that might mean. Define it and then start writing your own questions. I kind of brought these books because a lot of them have those sort of things in here. This is my book on Christie. I thought I had this one in here. Does this one not have it in here? Oh, I will cry if it doesn't. Wasn't there like a page of questions? Anyway, in one of my books of Christie, just on this like open flap, or like page like 5 on rights of kings, page 26 on love and compassion, right? This one doesn't have it. I'm really sorry. I don't know what I thought this one did. But I'm like, people might be like, you write in your books? I'm like, yes, because the books themselves are wonderful and valuable, but it's the knowledge, it's the information, it's your interaction with the book that matters. And now when my kids can sit down and read this book, they know what their mom got out of it. They know the things that I was thinking about when I read this book.
Really quickly, so when you do the page number, like, because I do write in my books, but if I'm writing on, like, I don't know, page 200 and I have this comment and stuff and I'm writing on it, so you just are making like a table of contents, so it's
kind of like a table of contents of the things, right?
No,
so I can just kind of open up one of my books that I've spent time preparing for discussion on, mm-hmm. and I can kind of see all the things that I might be able to cover.
Okay. And then if somebody else was to read the book after you, because sometimes in our family we would read the book after the other person and comment back, so would they just put theirs underneath yours?
Yeah, if you wanted to, I mean, you could make it. I mean, because, you know, you've got two pages in the front and two pages in the back.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Just, you know, make it your own. Even, like, you know, get some paper and, like, you can get those little, like, really thin glue sticks that you can then, like, kind of put it into the margins.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, make them your family books. If you're willing to spend money on, like, the library spines, right, that actually stay together for a long time or whatever, you can really have like an amazing history of like your family's reading and understanding. Next, prepare 5 to 7 minutes on the book. You want to talk about the author, okay? What their life experiences were, who are their influences, what their political ideologies are, their religious thoughts, their social thoughts, historical context. Okay, what was going on at the time that this book was written? Here's a little teeny thing that just kind of came to my mind the other day. I was reading Oppenheimer, and my husband's so because he's like a rancher guy and outside all the time, he was always kind of whiny, like, I have to have a beard because it keeps my face warm, and it's dumb that people want me to shave off my beard. I wonder why it came to having beards is so bad. So we were reading Oppenheimer, and it talked about the communist scare, and that anybody with longer hair and beards were really suspect for being communist sympathizers. And I thought, I don't know, I mean, David O. McKay, like, that was about the time that he would have become president of the LDS Church, and so I thought, I wonder if there's, like, a connection there, right? Like, beards had to leave because we don't want to be seen as communist sympathizers. I have not looked into that or studied that anymore. But it was just sort of a connection that I could make because of like the historical context of what was going on when I read that book. Historical context. And then if you have a story, just like I said, like on the inside of the page when I write, you know, consider this. Now I can kind of look through it and be like, here's an experience that I've had recently where I related to the characters like this, or this theme that's been explored in this book, this is how I related to it, this is how it, what it's meant to me over the last little bit. And then prepare questions, open-ended questions, character-driven questions. There's like three ideas of questions: factual, interpretive, and evaluative. All right, so factual is just what happened. The interpretive is what does it mean. The evaluative is this good, bad, how do we compare it to our own lives? Does anybody know Audrey Rindlisbacher? Have you followed her at all?
Oh, yeah.
She was kind of like a peer like back in the early 2000s when we were all coming up as new homeschoolers. And so I followed her, some of her stuff, and she's got a YouTube channel. She has like a mentoring group and stuff, but she had a YouTube video, probably 20 minutes long, called The Five Types of Questions. And this is what she says. The first one is knowledge. It's facts. It's the, in chapter 5, what color were the socks? Right? Like, what happens? And a lot of times, in just regular public school, because they can systematize it, they can formalize it, a lot of the learning from books kind of stops at that. What happens? Right? What's going on? It's just the facts back and forth, right? So it's important to do that. We've got to know. Do we know what happened in this book? Okay, and this is also, if you have followed Susan Wise Bauer, I don't know, do any of you kind of use her stuff for how you formulate your kids' education? Susan Wise Bauer, she wrote The Well-Trained Mind, grammar phase, logic phase, rhetoric phase. This would be the grammar phase. She also wrote a book called The Well-Read Mind, maybe? And she talks about how as people studied, they'd often read a book three times. The first one to just get the information. Then the next one to ask all the why questions, what's going on, what's happening here. And then the last one to make their opinion about it, right, to argue with the author. So as we read these questions, we can see how they kind of fall into those two, because true principles, we might define them a little bit differently, but we're still going to find those principles that overlap each other. All right, the second question are the meaning questions. What does it mean? Why did this happen? What's really going on here? We try to go a little bit deeper into the just the knowledge facts. Okay, and then this is where it gets good. So this is, number three, is the principles, the truths, the themes. Now, when you're in a discussion here, this is where you don't want to tell them what the principles and the themes are. You want to be able to ask them those first two questions so that they will say it themselves, so that their brain is what came up with it. Because when your brain puzzles through things, analyzes the information, asks the why questions over and over again, your brain can come up with the, what is the theme here? What does this really mean? What am I getting to? Why is this important on its own? And then the people in the discussion, they own that knowledge. It's not just the lecturer up at the front that just said, write this down because it's going to be on your test on Friday. And I just told you not to ever undermine public school, so I don't really mean to do that. But sometimes that's just kind of how it is, right? Because we're trying to get a bunch of people just a basic education. But so as you're asking those questions, keep asking. When somebody like answers something, it's like, okay, tell me why. Can you expound upon that? Explain more here. And then they will say the themes on their own. And then maybe when they say, that was just, I don't know, like she was, like, you know, when she like had to make that decision whether she was going to go on or she was going to stay with them. Okay, what is she doing? What is she being there? Well, like she's having to make a hard choice. But she was being a friend. I'm like, is that what the theme of this book is? Is it about friendship? And then they're like, yeah, it's about friendship, right? And you can do that if you can learn to ask those questions, and if you can learn to keep your own like opinions and thoughts sort of out of the discussion, and you can really listen to what your participants are saying, and you can start to dig, help them dig into their own brains, their own hearts, their own souls, so that they know what the themes are. Help them find them. Don't just tell them. Okay, that's the logic stage, right? And then we move on to the fourth kind of question, and that's the comparative question. Where else do we find these themes? What other books have you read where you found these? What movies have you watched where you found these? And like, I've learned like not to be a snob, right? If I can't get my boys to read 12 classics a year, I can probably get them to read two. Maybe I'll read one to them. Maybe their dad will read one to them. But we can watch some good movies together. And we can find these themes in the great movies. And they can have those times where they're still for just a moment and their soul is open and they have growth. They have understanding of who they are as a human, what choices they might face in their life, and they can resolve what choices that they want to make. Historical events. What historical events do you know where people either failed to make these decisions, people either failed to know these themes, or where they knew these themes and then they excelled? Right, there's a lot of things we can learn from the early 1900s and the way that governments all around the world were formed, what ideas they formed their governments on, and then what the results were 50, 60, 70, 80 years later. Okay. And then personal examples. How does this apply in your life? Right? What are some of the decisions you have to make? What are some of the obstacles and challenges that you face? Who are some of the people that you know that best exemplify these principles? Okay. And then application. How? Now that I know these things, now that I'm a little bit changed, what do I need to do in my life? What do I need to add? What do I need to take away? What do I need to change? Who do I need to go meet? What class do I need to take? What's the next book I'm going to read? What project do I need to start working on? What do I change or do differently because of how I now understand this? And that is, of course, aligns with the rhetoric phase. Here's just a few little notes I put on comments. Right now, does anybody have any questions on these things that we've gone over?
So I know, I guess it's a comment and a question. So when in listening to you talk about this stuff, it's easy, I think, to turn some of these questions into leading questions. Like, you already have your thoughts about the book. So mm-hmm. you can be like, so what about this? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? And then you'll pull something out of what they said. And, oh, I see. So this is what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? But it's what you're thinking. It's not what they're thinking. So how do you avoid, in your teaching, how do you avoid doing leading questions?
Okay. You know, I mean, that'll be one of the things I'll get to next. But okay. That's really important.
It seemed to me like all of these are important questions to be asking, but that they kind of meet different developmental needs. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to be asking kindergartners to say, how did this story apply to your life? Like, you're going to be asking them, what color were their socks in chapter 5, right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But then as they get older, you tend to incorporate more and more. And I like that you read stories as a family, because then your older kids could, you know, show examples of how to do those higher level of questions.
Right.
And the kids could see it modeled. The youngers could see it modeled.
For sure. Yeah, you're going to get much deeper conversations when you're with your older youth than you are, like she said, with kindergartners. But a kindergartner, like, they're going to know, well, those were yellow boots that they were wearing. But can they also be like, what do you think about this choice that they had to make? Was this a wrong choice or a right choice? They're able to start to think and develop that moral judgment, all right? You can also ask them, like, the feeling questions. How would this make you feel? Okay, and then you can start to have those conversations on emotions, on what things what life events typically bring out what emotions. So there is more that you can do with younger kids, but like I said, like that's probably the first most important thing that you do when you're first developing this discussion is know your audience. Okay, what can I talk about with them? What stages are they going through? What are they concerned about? What will they actually open up to? What do they understand? Anybody else? Yes?
I don't know if this is kind of related. So I like the idea of family style, and then as soon as I get there, I get in that trap of like, well, now I'm not meeting anybody's needs again, or, you know, anyway. So I'm constantly at battle with that. So how do you find the books that you would read to an entire family?
I think you
go for some of the older ones and hope the younger ones buy into it, or because some of them just leave the room and then I'm like, well, they didn't get anything.
I kind of had the opposite problem. Like my younger kids would stay and my oldest daughter was like, can I just go now? I have lots to do and I want to read my own books.
So the middle kids that want to be there. It's true.
Shorter snippets, right, of time, maybe. I think reading books that the parents themselves care about. And then a classic is a classic, and there's always going to be something that you're going to be able to get out of it. So if you're finding that it doesn't have wide appeal for your family, maybe you need to reconsider if that's actually a family classic or not. I mean, but, like, everybody's going to do it at their own level. I mean, and we definitely had Legos, you know, going on and stuff and coloring and people, like, standing on their head on the couch. Like, you know, they had to be quietish. But it's kind of like they knew that as long as mom was reading, they weren't doing chores. So maybe that was part of the pool for them to sit and listen for as long as they actually did. My next point I have on here is if you have more introverted participants, like especially in a group where they don't know each other necessarily, consider handing out paper and pencil and giving them a minute to write down their response to your question. And then ask everyone to take turns sharing. Because I'm a very, like, back-and-forth learner. When I'm in lecture, I want to almost be able to be, like, one-on-one with the professor. Okay, so tell me more about that. Give me more information. Okay, now let me ask you another question. So a personality like me can, if I'm not trying to be careful, I can kind of dominate a room, right? And I feel like, oh, this is so good. Everybody's getting so much out of this conversation I'm having. But they're not getting their own conversation. So, like I said, maybe you need to give people time to write stuff down and then actually direct questions at certain people. All right. You can learn to fill a room, to read a room, to see who's going to interact with you no matter what, because they're just those kind of learners. Maybe somebody who has something to say but's always going to let the other person be first. All right. Be aware of that and kind of help that flow a little bit better. This is back to Julie's question. I'm going to read what I wrote, and then I'll expound on what I think here. Stay neutral. Allow them to defend their comments and change their positions. Help guide a debated discussion with demand for respect. Redirect severe tangents, but don't be afraid to explore tangents that are still connected to principles of the book. They are showing you what interests them, which has meaning and value to them. Listen to understand this. This is the gold. This is where you start to see what's really happening inside of them, because it's the things that they're going to expound upon that matters to them. So as far as like going into Julie's question, I think it's probably true to say that one of the reasons why we homeschool is because we very much care about our core value systems, right? And so we want to teach that to our children. And I would never apologize for that, all right? As a parent, I have every right to do that for my family. And so I probably am going to ask some of those leading questions because I want them to get to those themes. Now, I want them to kind of get to them on their own, but I'm going to help guide where that's going to be. But they get to a certain age where I want them to also know what the opposite side is. So if I'm having this discussion with older kids and we're discussing a theme and everybody's like so into something like love and kindness and liberty, I'm going to be like, okay, but what about this? I'm going to at least know enough about what the opposing argument is that we can talk about it so that they understand what the opposing argument is that, and that they have been able to think through that themselves. And maybe I'm still kind of leading, guiding here, but if they at least know about it, then they can go and explore that on their own. But they know where I stand, and hopefully in these conversations I've helped pull out the things I feel like are going to best serve them for the rest of their life. Do you have any more comments on that?
I feel like showing the other side also teaches them empathy.
Right.
Because they're going to be meeting people that disagree with them the rest of their life, and just understanding that there's still people with differing opinions can just broaden their empathy and love for the world.
Absolutely.
Different opinions.
I think we do a really disservice to our kids when we only want just one side and we're not even willing to look at something else and to look at it honestly and to look at it with openness and with empathy, just like you said, right? We don't want to just be like, oh, look at those really dumb people who voted for this person, or look at those dumb people who think this way. Why do they think this way? What are some of their life experiences that may have brought them to this? Is there a failing inside of our culture that's making them think, no, this has got to be the only answer, even though we think that ultimately that's going to lead to heartache? Like, one of the hardest ones to have is the abortion issue, right? Like, it's sometimes for some people, it's just like, that's terrible, evil, that's the worst thing that you could ever do. But you're like, yeah. And really, as humans, it's natural in us to want to preserve and protect our newborns. So what has gone so wrong that people actually think this is a good idea, right? And that helps you to understand maybe what that would be like to be a young 18, 19-year-old that's trying to go to school and that doesn't know where the dad is anymore and just has no idea how she's going to try to make a life for this person. Right, and that also helps us maybe if we want to be involved in that, to help answer some of those questions that would then maybe give that person hope. Right, so I would just say as your kids get older, do everything you can to introduce them to everything they're going to face or see or hear in this world under your guidance and tutelage. Because you don't want them to get out there and be like, what? What is this? Okay, don't feel the need to control. If a great conversation is being had, but do be ready with more questions to redirect any non-useful tangents. There's always non-useful tangents. Or we've kind of beat this dead horse enough. Let's move on, right? And sometimes you might get to a lull where you need to step in with another thought-out question that you have. Okay, I'm just going to share a few of the books. And so my Antonia, we read this together, and I had not read it yet. And so one of the first chapters is the story of the Russian brothers. Do you guys know the story that happened with the Russian brothers? They had to move to the United States because they were expelled from their little community because one of them was going to marry one of the girls from the village next door, and it was the middle of winter. And on their way back home, with the girl, they were chased by wolves and they threw the girl off. Now, I'm like, ooh, this is a story my boys will really, they'll listen to this one. That's morbid and weird, and I'm sorry, but if you have six boys in a row, you're going to know what I'm talking about there. I mean, can you imagine the discussions that we had there? Right? I don't know. I was going to say Russian thought versus American thought, but their village did expel them. So obviously there was still some right or wrong, making the hard decisions, even when your own life's at peril, right? Even in the midst of the craziest, life-saving adrenaline that you're going through, can you still make the right choice? All right, so that one was a pretty powerful one to share with my boys. Little Bridges, we talked about that. All right, I think it was like the first time my husband and I like read this together, and we were laying in bed and he was reading it to me. And have you guys all read this book? Okay, like, so spoiler alert, there's something very sad that happens like the last like couple chapters, and we were just both, like, my husband's trying not to be like crying because he's reading and because he's like, you know, the man, he's like, but he was like crying and I was crying, and it was just like this soul moment, right? Like we were both sharing in something that was so meaningful to our hearts. It's not fiction, like it's his memoir, right? So, but I mean, it's something so outside of us. It didn't happen to us. It was, you know, hundreds of years ago, but we had that time. And I think these moments are one of the things that just has solidified our marriage, because we have such shared emotional experiences outside of just the things that happen on a day to day when everything just same. Christy, and again, I still really just can't believe that I don't have this in here. Maybe it was a piece of paper that I had. Anyway. Okay, hiding place. How many of you guys have shared that with your kids and just kind of come to a point where you just don't even know what to say, right? This is kind of a fun one by the Great Horn Spoon. And I have... out of my six boys, three of them have severe dyslexia. Like, they really weren't independent readers, so they were, like, between 12 and 14 years old. But they loved to listen to me read to them. And so my youngest boy, who he can read now, but he doesn't love it. He's like, you know that one book you read? And they were, like, boxing. And, like, he won because he knew how to box. Right? Like... okay, like, you're not some, like, great, amazing, like, scholar who's going to go into, like, Plato and Aristotle for me, at least not right now at this age, but because there was a boxing tournament here, and because the guy was such a gentleman, he had such impeccable manners, he was a butler, right, like, he would, like, even in the gold mining camp, he would, like, you know, carry out the tea kind of a thing. But when it came down to having to, I think something had been stolen and they had to get it back. And so he challenged him to a duel, and he knew boxing. And so he was able to win. So that one just really, like, it left an impression on my young man's heart. All right. I have five. We need to, like, kind of groups of five. Maybe, like, right here can be one. And then right here can be one. And then maybe if a couple of you back there will kind of scoot over to that side. I guess that would only make... okay. Get together in a group.
Here we go.
Okay, so it's just like a little clip of one of the most, like, poignant books to me. So there's the ending of the chapter, so start with the, like, the full double page spread, and then just read to the end.
There was nothing else in the room except the drawers, the blue decorated trunk in the corner, and each of the doll had a small rocking chair. The flashlight Gina touched the screen in turn, angled at the officer trembling to bed. Trembling, the two girls rose from the bed and followed him, rushing past the intervening officers in the doorway. Anna Marie The street soldiers were often young, sometimes ill-at-ease, and angry. Remembered how the giraffe had, for a moment, let his harsh pose slip, but these three persons were often. But these men were older, and their faces were severe. Her parents stood beside each other, their faces tense. But Kirsty was more enthused. Thank goodness that Kirsty slept in the woods. At her point, they had been like the same big waiting, or were she angry? For a moment, this would probably slip into your mind. Quiet, you're a newbie for yourself. Your name? he was glaring at Ellen.
Ellen swallowed.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, like a minute. When they're finished, you guys all done? Okay. So we've just read this little excerpt from Number of the Stars by Lois Lowry. Set in, what would be the historical setting? Do you guys know? Okay, World War II. Background is a family willing to, take on a Jewish girl as their own, right? So probably one of the most profound moments I had was reading this and coming to that last paragraph. Okay, what's the symbolism? What's the meaning? What is the author setting up for us to understand here in this last paragraph?
I don't know if this is what you're after, but the one girl protected the Jew,
right,
by grabbing. I mean, she had the thought to grab the necklace and make
right
sure that she had the Star of David
right
in her hand. So it was a, well, I mean, she
yeah
thought it through.
The Star of David
in her hand,
in the palm of her hand. Setting that girl up as like a Christ figure for the book, right? The combination of the Jewish symbol into the palm of the hand, the Christian symbol. It is, you know, as you share those things with your family, and if I asked a few questions, I could have probably gotten you guys to go like, right? And maybe you did on your own. But that's a powerful thing, right? Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to take somebody else's symbol up on the palm of my hand if my life's in danger? Am I willing to be that kind of person? Right? That's a deep one. That's a hard one. But that's a powerful,
that's a powerful discussion point when you're discussing, because it opens your soul, even for just a minute, to make you ponder the most important questions of life. All right, I just challenge you now as we end that take your favorite book, read through it, prepare. What would I ask? Who do I want to share this with? What are they interested in? Right? And let books, movies, I'm just kind of showing maybe like my family's political bent, like publications, right? Like read them, discuss them, talk about them, and then talk about the opposites. Just like we said, drain the swamp. Is a large federal government important and needed, or should we simplify it? Like that's a great conversation to have with your kids. Okay, tariffs. Is that an important conversation? Should your kids at least know like some of the different philosophies on whether tariffs are good or bad? What do they lead to in the long run, right? Okay, government organizations. How effective are they, right? Is the open market more effective than government? And if so, why? And if no, we need the government, why? And how should it be funded? And how should it be ran? And how do we fight against the ultimate corruption that's pretty much always going to happen inside of large bureaucracies? Look, somebody in my family was interacting with this one. Populist conservatism and constitutional order. Are there some good things? Just like a short read, like 20, 30 minutes. We could sit down and read this and discuss the principles in it. And we could have that moment where we were able to think some deep thoughts and understand things on a better level. Any other questions that you guys would like to know? And I you guys all, like, you don't, maybe some of you are just newbie homeschoolers. I always, like, when I was a newbie, I always wanted, like, somebody who'd been homeschooling for a long time to just answer all my questions. Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to answer? And I'll tell you what worked for our family or what not worked. But maybe you guys are all, like, are kind of veterans yourself and don't really have any questions. All right. So, okay, Julie?
Okay, my 13-year-old daughter, she's awesome. She is coming on this, she's on this verge of coming from this love of learning to like more of a scholar phase, right? And she's great. She struggles with reading. I've done the like at home tests of like, is she dyslexic or whatnot? And everything says no, she's not. But she struggles with reading like under being able to like answer the questions quickly. You know what I mean? So like it'll take her a minute, like your teacher will ask her something, and then she'll need to like process what they're saying. And she gets so embarrassed, and because she's like, I think they think I'm like dumb. And she's like, but it takes me a minute to like have somebody else answer something, and then my teacher comment to them, and then all the connections just come really fast. And then she's like, but I don't want people to think I'm dumb. But like, how do
and
I
that's
help
a
her?
Learning style, right?
Yeah.
But that's why I said, if you have people who are slower,
yeah,
give them time. Give everybody a minute to compose their thoughts.
Yeah.
And then to be able to share. Can you talk to her?
I'm
going to
say,
yeah,
I can tell her right now that so she was in my class this last semester, and I can tell you that I don't feel that way at all about her. I always thought her, what she said was amazing. Like, yes, it took time, but everybody needed time, right? Like, she had some really, really good insights.
It's
so
a good
helps.
Teacher that will know, like, no, some of my students just, they want to be right. They want to be careful. They don't want to dispute something out.
Yeah.
They're not wanting
to
debate back and forth on something.
So
they want to know, what do I think?
Yeah.
And that's going to take a minute. And actually, I think when you read books with her, when you discuss anything, have her say, just go write down what you think. You know, you come into that quote, like, I don't know what I think until I write. Right? It's writing that helps us connect our thoughts together. And we need to have our kids do that so they can start to feel comfortable with what that connection process actually looks like. When we get it out of our head and onto paper, it makes it seem more concrete.
Well, and along that same lines of sometimes we think one way, but we go through a conversation with our peers and we're like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And it's like just giving yourself permission to look at it differently. Because sometimes, like, okay, this is how I'm going to answer it. This is what my answer is going to be. And all of a sudden, you're like, wait, but I feel differently than the way that I answered it the first time. And it's okay. But our kids need to know. Like, sometimes you have to be told, it's okay.
Exactly. And I think that's such an important part of, like, discussion, too, is, like, I want to give you permission to change your thoughts and opinions as we talk here. Right? So that they, like, that learning and becoming is a process. Right? It's going to happen throughout their whole life. It's not, they're not stuck here with this is what I know, this is what I think. Listen to people, formulate, write, and become comfortable. And like I said, and maybe even if she wants to be able to express, maybe just say to her teacher, it just takes me a moment. Can I send you, can I email you my thoughts after class or whatever? Can I email my students? That's, you know, it's like some online classes, like you get on the discussion boards and you have a moment to read through everybody's things and then write out what you think, right? So that can give different learning styles an opportunity to be part of the discussion. All right, what am I at, like done?
You've got like 2 minutes.
Okay, any other questions, 2 minutes? Okay,
what age range do you like number the stars for? Because you hooked us, you know, and that hasn't read it.
If you have some really willing learning readers, like middle school, totally. I find sometimes though, like if you have ones that are maybe like coming out of public school where they're still just like, oh, just tell me the answer, I'll write it down and I'll tell it to you back on Friday. If you're like that and they still don't really know how to engage in that process themselves, I find it's actually easy with some of the high school students to take them through maybe a book that would be like middle school age, take them through the whole book, and then I try to pull out paragraphs or excerpts from like maybe Plato, right? Like maybe I would find like some really great like page from Plato or Aristotle on friendship that we could then kind of put in there so that they're getting some of those like amazing great classics, but that they can engage with the easier reading and you don't scare them, don't burn them out.
I did read that with my third and fifth grade boys, and I loved it because there's nothing really graphic in it. There's nothing too scary about World War II. So
right.
It's a very friendly introduction book to...
As opposed to Hiding Place.
Yeah. There's nothing really... I mean, it's got tense moments, and it's a really great way to introduce the Holocaust and World War II to younger kids.
Yes.
So I appreciated that for my third and fifth grade.
That'd be a good family book then, like the one you're talking about, right? Because it can go for all the ages.
Yeah, and that's the book where you learn like the cocaine rags, right, that they put on the dog's nose to dull their smelling. So, like, when they would bring out the smelling dogs, right, like, you couldn't hide. So they would take these, like, handkerchiefs that had cocaine on them.
And the afterword is actually really, really good. It talks about how in Denmark, like, almost all of their Jews were able to be
they survived.
Saved. Uh-huh. Yeah, because they worked together as a country, all the citizens to...
Yeah, and so what a great historical context. Thing to like, you know, the first, right? Especially if you're doing it with older kids, like third and fourth, fifth graders, maybe just want to get into the book. But anyway, all right, thank you so much for your participation.
Thank you.